everyone. Thanks for coming here this morning to take a look at some of these talks. My name is Mark, and today we're going to be looking at some of my research on the effects of soil freeze thaw cycles on nitrous oxide emissions. So not surprisingly, what the areas and where these areas are that we're talking about are places that are cold and experience freezing. Denitrification is a natural process that happens in all soils that experience freezing, but the areas in particular that are at the greatest risk are those that are croplands that experience prolonged freezing for long periods of time. So this map here, the darker the color, the greater the risk for N2O emissions from soils. As to why, well, that's somewhat of an interesting question, just because we are not really sure as to why there's nitrous oxide yet. This graph on the right here is probably the best measure of how or why nitrous oxide is coming off of soils. And this is accumulation of 20 years of research, and the best measure is that the more that soil freezes, the greater the emissions. So that leaves a lot of room for knowledge, I guess, expanding the knowledge base for nitrous oxide. As to why, one of the reasons why I think there is a lot of room to that is that it's really hard work to go out and do freeze thaw testing. This is our field site in Ottawa. Ottawa is officially the coldest capital on Earth, where even the statues wear scarves in the winter. It's quite cold. So it's not a lot of fun going out there and doing the gas sampling in the winter. And even during thaw, it's quite messy out there. You don't want to be walking in your fields, ruining the integrity of the soil. So it's quite a hard environment to measure. It's also really hard to actually catch the thaw. It's a very short period in when these emissions are coming off. And if you miss it, you don't get another chance. You get one shot a year, and that's it, unfortunately. And even if everything goes right, next year could be completely different. The conditions year to year play a large role in N2O emissions. So that comes into my study as to what I wanted to do. I wanted to take some of the complications of the field out of my study entirely, because I didn't want to do that. So I wanted to create a lab method that some people in the audience saw yesterday that accurately simulated freeze thaw. And with that, we were going to test some factors that, such as the cropping system, freezing duration, and then the soil nitrogen dynamics during freeze thaw. So this is a quick overview of what the simulation study wanted to recreate. What we wanted to go away from was the omnidirectional freezing, which a lot of other studies use, where soil's freezing from all directions. What we wanted to create was something that froze from the top down, or unidirectional. The system we use is really simple, in a way. It's just styrofoam coolers filled with soil to create integrity and an insulation. There's a heating pad at the bottom to make sure the soil doesn't freeze at the bottom, and there's also snow at the top for the insulation and to create some moisture during thaw. Once they were finished, they went into the freezing room where they experienced the freezing. The four cores that are teal there on the outside were used for gas sampling, and the middle core we use for soil sampling. So for the thaw, this is kind of what we wanted to recreate here, is where this thaw occurs from the top down, exactly as it would in the field. So that frozen layer shrinks and moves down as it thaws, which restricts the moisture and keeps the soil saturated with water, which is an anaerobic environment where denitrification would occur. So that's exactly what we want to create. The picture there at the top is an example of that ponding of water, which we see in the field. As to some of the results, well, the study actually performed quite well in terms of the rate of freezing and and cooling compared to other studies in the area, other field sites, which is definitely a promising result for a first trial. In terms of getting into the treatments, this is the general procedure of how we went about that. So we had our coolers, we set our cores, which had the unique treatments. They went into the freezer room. They experienced a different amount of freezing as to which routes that had their snow on there. And then they moved into the cold room where they experienced their thaw. And during the freezing and thawing, there is gas sampling and soil sampling over the duration, depending on kind of targeted sampling. So during a freeze, there was not a lot of sampling, but during thaw, it was quite rapid. So going into the treatments, we had an annual crop of silage corn and then a perennial forage mix. Within that, cores received manure or didn't have manure, and those were seen as our controls. And then with that, each grouping experienced a different amount of freezing hours for 12 treatment combinations. These were replicated 4 times for a total of 48 cores, and then there was 12 cores that we used for soil sampling for a total of 60 cores. Unfortunately, I don't have the 5,000 hours data yet, so I don't have the ANOVA or regressions yet, but they will be somewhere along the line. So what did we see? With the soil sampling, what I did is I had these specially designed collars or cores that I could sample during freeze, the profile itself. So what I was looking at was the 0 to 5 centimeter to 5 to 10 and the 10 to 5, just to see if there is an actual spot in the soil profile that is somewhat more important than others. I'll say that soil, other areas aren't important. And what I found was that the top layer especially, there is a lot more action in terms of carbon and nitrogen. So the carbon in the top 5 is the dark color there, the black. So directly after thaw, the carbon level actually almost doubled. Then it decreased over thaw back to its somewhat close to its original levels. And then in the bottom layers, so the 5 to 10 and then the 10 to 15, I averaged them because they were very similar to one another. The increase, the trend is somewhat the same, but it's kind of dulled. So there's not as much of an increase and decrease after thaw. With nitrogen, it stayed fairly consistent during freeze. And then at the end of thaw, it started to go down. But then the actual proportion of nitrogen is somewhat tells a different tale opposed to total nitrogen. So ammonia in the top 5 centimeters went up quite a bit during freeze. It stayed consistent during thaw, and then it went down during the later half of thaw. And nitrate stayed consistent during freeze for that duration, and then it dropped considerably during the early thaw, and then went back up at the late thaw. So these are some of the dynamics for nitrogen and carbon cycling that we wanted to look at. And then the N2O emissions are also quite interesting. So this is one of the forage manure, or an average of the forage manure cores for N2O emissions. And the greatest amount there you see is pretty much right after thaw begins. So within 4 hours are when the nitrous oxide emissions start occurring. They peak quite quickly, and with this one kind of major peak, and then they level off. But in general, I would say that the N2O fluxes for the cores were quite low, except for a few. So this is an average, looking at all the treatments that I have so far of the N2O missions. And the reason why the error bars are so big on four of those treatments are because of these four cores, single cores, that had really high fluxes, or what people call, I guess, those hot moments. In general, I guess there's no significant difference between them, but the means of the cores that experienced greater freezing were had a bit higher N2O emissions. So we'll have to wait to see what the 5,000 is. Hopefully it's a lot, I guess. I guess another part of the issue with these missions is that the controls for this plot were only really controls for one growing season. With my thinking that maybe the soil needs more time to actually be a true control, that probably has some major factor in the quality of this. And how it compares to the field. So, what I'm focusing on here are the four, those four cores that had these large emissions right here. Because those are kind of the best representation of a flux. And they all kind of had this one major peak, or I guess kind of hump there, which is somewhat similar to what you see in the field. The one major difference, as you can see from the sampling points here, is that there's a lot more sensitivity for the lab study. It's a lot easier to go into a cold room and sample every day, opposed to going out into the field and doing that. So that general pattern, which we see in the field with that one major major peak, is what we're seeing. Although it's a much larger flux in the field that we're finding, and much higher values, but the general trend is, I guess, is a good sign for a first trial. So the main conclusions that I have from the study is the first objective, which was the simulation cooled and thawed, similar to the field conditions. It did replicate quite well as to what we wanted to see in the field. The carbon, which was an interesting story, how it kind of peaked after thaw. I originally thought it would build up over thaw, but it did not do that. So it's an interesting feature there. The total nitrogen stayed consistent until late thaw. However, the proportion of nitrogen, I find, is quite important for these kind of studies, which changed quite a lot during the study. And grouping those together, also that top 5 centimeters is quite important for nitrous oxide emission studies. The final conclusion is that there were major nitrous oxide fluxes captured after thaw, which is promising for, I guess, the next study that I'll do in a couple weeks. So those are my main conclusions. Thanks, guys.
Questions for Mark?
There's lots. Sure.
Yeah, so great, really interesting talk, and very clear. Would you say that the emissions in the field, would they be mostly from the, like the thawing, would they be mostly out of the top 5 centimeters? And then another one is can you explain the changes in carbon and ammonia at the times when they occur, actually?
Right, so in terms of if they're coming on that top 5 centimeters, that's a good question. It's really hard to do that kind of sampling out in the field. As you can see, that's kind of what it looks like out there. It's not easy to sample frozen soil, to say the least. The way that I did is I preset my cores so that I could kind of take them out as I wanted. But I think what it showed in my study is that, yes, the majority of the action is in that top layer. As to why, I'm not too sure yet. It'll take more time. In terms of the dynamics, there is kind of the thought that this is primarily driven by the microbiota in the soil, and maybe the idea is as the soil's freezing, it's crystallizing this water, which might be lysing the microbiota in the soil itself. And with that, maybe it's, I kind of call it like an all-you-can-eat buffet of nutrients for the microbiota that does survive. So when it actually begins to thaw, there's just this big pool, I guess, of available nutrients for microbiota. And then maybe that's why you see that jump in carbon, because there's a lot more microbes.
Thank you.
Yeah.